Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I'm Matt.
And today we're answering a listener's question about life insurance.
All right, Joel, so you're going to share the big news? You finally actually closed on a new property, right?
Yeah. So I just bought my first multifamily property. So it's a duplex. And if you are a member of the Facebook group, you probably saw me post recently a picture of a nerdy board game and some beers. And so that's how my wife and I celebrated this new purchase. The finer things in life, right? Nerdy board games and good beer. But yeah, so we bought a duplex and we're really excited about it. It's my first foray into multifamily investing. You know, I have three single family homes and now this. And man, you know, you and I, we've talked about it multiple times on the podcast already. And not to bore the heck out of people that don't care about real estate investing, but I'm super pumped about this. And, you know, the numbers work out really good. I've got solid tenants in there. It's a solid house. So the great thing too, I think a lot of people think, and the biggest excuse I hear from people who don't want to start investing in real estate, and by the way, if you don't want to, you don't have to, but the biggest excuse is, oh man, it's going to be so much work. And there's ways that you can get into real estate investing where it's not an overwhelming amount of work from the get-go. And the property I just purchased, even though it's a duplex, it is one of those things. It's not necessarily completely turnkey, but man, it's not a whole lot of work from the get-go. And I'm kind of all about buying properties that fit that mold because I still have a full-time job and a family and a life, right?
Yeah, that's right. You're not going to have to do much. I mean, the pictures I saw of it, I need to get down there and see it in person, but the pictures you shared, yeah. Looks dope.
Yeah, if I got a vacancy, man, put your name in the hat. I'll consider you.
Do I have to fill out an actual application?
You know, okay. I might call your previous landlords, but I have a feeling you're probably good to go.
It's been a minute, but I remember his name. Kip.
All right.
Kip. I actually remember his last name too, but I'm not going to say it. So you're talking about it not being a lot of work. So certainly it's in great shape. You're not going to have to do much right off the bat. What are your thoughts as far as dealing with tenants? Because you're going from, even though you're only adding a single property, it's got twice as many tenants, right? Twice as many potential folks that you're going to have to be in touch with and hear from, collect rent from, that sort of thing.
Yeah, so that's definitely been a consideration. And I'm interested to see, you know, how much that increases my workflow on investment properties.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to increase my workflow, you know, at double the rate because it is still one building, one roof, and some of those things are in common. But
yeah, you can get down there once and take care of multiple problems.
Exactly. So yeah. I don't think it's going to double, but I do think it'll increase it. So I'm really interested to see how, you know, a duplex, you know, increases my workload when it comes to the investment properties. Or you know what? Maybe just it really doesn't increase that much. And,
yeah, man.
And so much of it really does come down to the underlying, you know, house structure of the house, how good a shape it's in, you know, what repairs, the little things are going to break, right? Like a toilet's going to need a new flushing mechanism, or your stove's going to break, or whatever, like a fridge is going to go down. So those things are just going to happen. But, you know, the underlying structure of the house, man, that's so important to how many calls you're going to get too. So just buying a solid house from the get-go with good tenants, I mean, that cures 90% of your ills.
Yeah. Yes, four-side brick, which I'm kind of jealous of because we're starting to save up some money for a paint job on our personal house, and I'm just not really looking forward to that. Like, I'm going to enjoy it because we get to choose a new color, which is kind of cool, but thinking about wood rot and that kind of thing, I'm just like, oh, I just wish it was made of brick. So you don't have to worry about that ever again. But
I know. I love the way painted wood siding looks, but
yeah, it's got that classic look. There's trade-offs for sure.
Yeah, but the brick is just, there's nothing to worry about, really, which is really nice.
And right off the bat as well, the property meets the 1% rule. We've talked about this before as well, which is awesome, man, especially in this kind of market, right?
Yeah, so it's tough to find. And, you know, there was a question actually on our Facebook group. One of our listeners wanted to know, hey, should I hold off on buying a house because look at where things are within the housing market. It's crazy out there.
Yeah, it is a hot market.
And that's definitely true. It's been almost a year since I bought my last house. They're few and far between, right? I'm not ready to buy like five houses a month. I just don't think there are that many good deals. But I do think there are deals to be found in every market. And so I think it is worth considering if you are interested looking now. And if a house does meet that 1% rule, which is the monthly rent revenue meeting 1% of the cost of the house, if you can meet that rule, man, I think it's a good move in any market to buy a house that meets that rule if it's in good condition and you think you're going to own it for a long period of time. So yeah, this duplex for me meets that 1% rule. And I'm stoked about it. I think this is going to be a great place for me to own for the long haul.
Yeah, man, absolutely. It seems awesome. So kind of on the opposite end of that, or like in the complete opposite direction, getting out where we're not spending tons of money on an investment property. We were looking at our budget for the rest of the year and, you know, just kind of like looking at numbers. Dude, we actually did the math on what it takes for us to like feed ourselves, like our family of five. And it only cost us $1 a meal.
Dude.
Per person. $1 a person per meal.
That's like the holy grail of eating costs right there, man.
And here's the thing. That also includes diapers. Like, we don't separate out our actual food from like our grocery runs, right? So like our grocery budget includes like stuff from the pharmacy, ibuprofen, diapers, trash bags, things like that. Just the standard sort of stuff. Toothpaste, deodorant. And so in reality, I think we're eating for actually less than $1 a meal per person. And you might be thinking, we've got little girls. I mean, Dottie's only 1 year old, but have you seen her eat?
I've seen her belly.
Yes. I'm not kidding. I think Kate and Dottie, if you were to weigh like the actual amount of food that they have, like in a normal meal, like Kate eats just a normal portion, but then Dottie goes and eats an insane amount of food for a 1 year old. And like you said, it shows.
Dude, that's incredible though, because most people that talk about how much you should spend, you know, on meals for your family, the patented thought is that it should be, you know, $2 a meal. If you can get it down to $2 a meal per person, you're crushing it.
Or so I even saw something posted where they're talking about $5 a dinner or like something like that. When sure, if you're going out all the time and you're eating out and you're used to doing drinks and dropping $50 a night on a weekday,
yeah, you're gonna save a lot doing that.
Yeah, $5 makes it sound like you're Warren Buffett or something like that, but that's still a lot compared to our entire family eating for $5 per meal.
Okay, so next episode, can we cover this in detail? Because I really do want to get into it. I'm really curious, and I think it would help a lot of people out there.
Like the meal thing? Here's the thing with Kate. I've talked to her about it, and she has more of a philosophy on like the way she approaches food and the way she cooks. I need to talk to her and see if we can figure out some specific like tips. Like, do this. This is how it'll save. Like, do this. This is how it'll save.
Well, okay, that's your homework for this week. Because you can't just tell everyone in the audience, like, hey, we eat for $1 a meal for our family. And that's breakfast, lunch, and dinner, right? Because dinner usually is a lot more expensive. Like breakfast, you feel like you can get away with it. You know, eggs, maybe, you know, probably eggs and toast.
And toast, some fruit.
A little bit of coffee, fruit. Yeah, you can get away with it. And lunch, easy too, right? A little bit easier. Maybe a veggie and some nuts or whatever. But dinner, man, how do you get away with that?
Well, see, yeah, you say veggie and nuts, and I'm like, yeah, that sounds normal. But I think for a lot of people, they're like, wait, I go out to eat for lunch.
Okay.
If
you're going out to eat, right? Yeah, that's the biggest thing. All right. But so hopefully, but if it's not next episode, really, really soon, we'll
I would love to,
specifics.
Man, to be able to maybe we should just have her on to really be able to explain it, because she really does handle almost 100% of our grocery budget as well as the cooking. And there's a lot of insight there. The reason I brought it up was because we're kind of looking at ways to tighten the belt a little bit.
And I don't think you can cut there.
Yeah, exactly. And so I was just like, okay, could we go leaner, you know, in our grocery budget? And that's why I sat down and actually did the math and realized, oh, dear Lord, no, I don't think we can go. I don't think we can like make this any slimmer at all, because I think we're getting into like third world Russia or something, you know, like surviving only on like a goat for the year.
Living in like the Siberian wilderness or something. Yeah. Yeah, and we know Kate's got a voice for radio because everyone heard that just a few episodes ago when we had our wives on, which was really fun. So, let's have her on soon.
That was still my favorite episode, I think. Maybe because they were doing all the talking and we're just sort of like cracking jokes the whole time.
A little bit easier. Just ask them questions, right? Yeah, that was good.
Should we get more into the interview sort of style? Maybe that would be. If we're just prepping whoever we're going to have on and they're just going to answer questions, and the whole time we're just kind of like making jokes and drinking beer.
That's a good point.
You know, that sounds pretty nice.
I'm really good at cracking jokes and drinking beers. But yeah, on that note, we'll definitely do some. We do have some interviews planned coming up with some people, so I'm kind of excited to get into that part of the show. So stay tuned. You know, by the end of the year, we'll have a few interview episodes with people that are experts in certain fields that we're not nearly as knowledgeable in. So those should be a learning process for you and I, and then also for our audience at the same time, which is fun.
Yeah, and like Joel said earlier, we're going to answer a listener's question. If you have a question, please write in. You can send us a message via the form on our website, pournotpoor.com, or just shoot us an email, pournotpoor@gmail.com. We love hearing from all you listeners, and whether that means just sort of chiming in with a recent beer find that you've come across in your city or state, but all the way down to specific questions on life insurance, like we're going to talk about today. I've mentioned this before, but having specific questions for us to answer, it just feels like such a tangible way that we're helping folks. Like, granted, I know that every episode we talk about, hopefully we're helping people, But to answer a specific question, you feel like the rubber is actually meeting the road and we're moving somebody forward in their life, at least financially.
Yeah.
And that makes me feel good.
And, you know, I know that you feel the same way, but just getting emails from listeners is, man, like it like makes me smile ear to ear when we get an email from a listener and they've learned something or they have a question or they just want to say hi. And it just feels awesome. Like, okay, hey, we're meeting the people that we're creating this show for and kind of creating this community around. And so that's just a blast to me.
Only if you start the email with, Matt and Joel, we love you guys so much. We love the podcast and we've written reviews.
Yeah. Or if it's like, oh, hey, Matt and Joel, hated that last episode. Then we just delete it immediately. That's what happens then.
I actually delete those from the inbox before you get to them.
Oh,
so.
Oh, that's why I'm only happy when I see the emails.
Yeah. I'm protecting you.
All right. On to the beer for the day. Odd 13 Brewing. Out of Lafayette, Colorado. And can I say, Matt, I had this a couple weeks ago. Already know I love it, but let's crack it and have it together.
I have missed drinking IPAs. We haven't had an IPA in a while, and I was especially bummed that we weren't drinking an IPA a couple weeks ago on... There's all these stupid holidays, but when I saw that it was National IPA Day, I was kind of bummed that I didn't have an IPA in my fridge.
That's a pour not pour fail right there.
I know.
Although all those holidays, they're getting ridiculous. They're out of hand.
Yeah.
How many holidays can there be and who gets access to create these holidays? It's just getting utterly ridiculous.
So without doubt, this is a hazy New England style IPA. It looks awesome.
And those juicy notes just smack you right in the nose as you open the can. You don't even have to pour it out to get that.
Yeah, it happened right when I cracked the can. I could smell it and I started pouring. So we're talking about the visuals here, right? And so the beer almost looks like orange juice. It's got that nice, solid, orangey beer color that you see from New England IPAs. But then also, too, I want to mention the can because this is the sort of most unique looking beer can I think I've ever seen. You want to describe it?
Yeah, so Odd 13 makes some really good beers. And I've actually gotten to go to their brewery before, and it's great. And their cans all kind of have like superhero themes. And so this one has like...
Yeah, it straight up looks like a comic book.
Yeah. This is like an alien superhero in some sort of intergalactic
space
fight.
Laser scene.
Yeah. So I think he's going to win and dominate, you know, humankind or something like that. But yeah, Odd 13 seriously makes some of the best beers I've ever had. I've kind of been obsessed with them ever since my buddy Carl sent me one beer by them. And actually got this beer from Carl doing a beer trade in person, which, by the way, is the way to go. If you're meeting in another city, bring beer, trade with somebody, and make sure to fly Southwest because you get a checked bag for free. So that's what I'm talking about. Fly Southwest. Make those beer trades happen for Frizzle. But this beer is, I just had a sip, incredible.
Yeah, this is up there with Trillium, Bissell Brothers. This is really, really good, man. I mean, the best way that these New England styles are described are juicy. Like these juicy, dry hopped IPAs. I mean, they have a lot of hop presence, but at the same time, they just have a lot of fruit notes, a lot of fruit flavors. Whereas like the West Coast IPA have those resiny, kind of piney flavors. And this is all hoppy fruit in your face.
Yeah, this is awesome. I wish I had more of this. Yeah, thanks, Carl, for doing that beer trade with me. And... anybody makes it out to Colorado, there's a bunch of good breweries to visit, but put Odd 13 on your list because Odd 13 makes delicious beers.
We're going to take a quick break, but right after that, we're going to get to Josh's questions about life insurance.
So let's get into the topic of the day, Matt. And the question we are answering today is from a listener named Josh about life insurance.
Yeah, he wrote in last week, and his question is, I have a 15-year term policy because my plan is that I will be able to be self-insured by 2032 or so when the policy is up. Is that a good move, or should I try to get a longer-term policy? Also, what age should I make sure I get a policy before? Is there a certain age where if I apply for a policy, it will be significantly more expensive, or is it all health-based? I turned 35 today, so it has me thinking about getting old. Well, Josh, a late happy birthday to you. Hope it's going well for you, man.
And yeah, you're old, dude. I mean, I don't know what I would do if I was that old, but...
Also, too, man, you've got a $2 million policy. Good for you, because that tells me you've got that you're making a good amount of money. So
good income.
Yeah, man, keep it up.
And that you're insuring yourself well. So let's get into the nuts and bolts. I think there are a lot of things to cover in this question, because you know, there's the question of, is term life insurance the best way to go? how long should you be insured for? And, you know, kind of what the purpose is. That's kind of one of the questions that he's asking here too. What's the purpose behind term life and how long do I need it for? And so let's get into each of those kind of one by one. We'll kind of walk through it, Josh, and hopefully, you know, have a good answer, you know, not just for your question, but for a lot of folks out there listening that are in their 20s and 30s in particular. But even if you're older and you don't have life insurance, these are good questions to wade through to kind of figure out, you know, whether you need life insurance, and if you do, what kind of life insurance and how you should go about insuring yourself. And so we'll kind of walk through the process.
Yeah. So specifically, Josh asks, is that a good move, or should I try to get a longer term policy? You know, he's only got a 15 year because he's planning to be self-insured. He's planning to be essentially financially independent by the time that plan expires. And to that, we would say, yeah, man, it's a great move. You know, we don't know what your expenses are, but I assume that $2 million fits with your lifestyle and with your income and your expenses. But in general, having a level term life insurance is the simplest and most affordable way to go. It makes the most sense. You're able to lock in that premium every single month, and it's never going to change. You're going to pay that for the entire length of that policy. And that's a rarity, you know, to know that, like, okay, this payment is never going to change. And I know that, like, if I were to die, you know, pass away early. This is sort of a morbid topic, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
I feel like it's worth, like, mentioning that,
hey man, we all gonna die, you know? So,
but you know that if that's gonna, you know, if that does happen, that this is how much you'll get paid out.
And term life insurance, like you said, is kind of the best way to go because you know how much you're gonna pay over the next 15 years in Josh's case, 20 years in my case, but you know, however long of a term you take out, you're paying the same monthly payment every month.
Yeah, no surprises.
Yeah.
You lock it in. That's I think it's amazing.
And there are other types of insurance, right, that can just balloon, or your insurer can tell you, hey, your premiums just are rising 60% for the next year. And they might continue to escalate at a ridiculous rate. But when it comes to term life insurance, you're locked in at the same rate every year, good to go.
So to give you listeners a feel for, I guess, what the average policy out there roughly goes for, if you're a 35-year-old male or female, you're looking at around paying $35 a month, and that comes out to about $420 a year for a 20-year term policy for $500,000 worth of coverage, which is awesome.
Yeah, that's great. That's great, right? Yeah.
You know, like, think about it, like $500,000 and you're paying $35. I mean, that's less than the cost of pretty much any utility that you have, you know, that's like a couple pizzas.
Yeah. So that's a good number to kind of go on. You want to find a policy in this price range. If you are 35 years old, male or female, you're likely going to pay roughly $35 a month.
And that's for non-smokers.
Yeah. Healthy lifestyle, right? And if you wait, if you delay to buy that policy, and we'll talk about this a little bit more further down too, you're going to pay 2.5 to 4 times that much, you know, the older you get. Like when you get to age 50, you're roughly going to pay 2.5 to 4 times as much. And so, yeah, buying your term coverage earlier on in life is a good way to go.
And specifically term life, you know, there's other insurance products out there. Most popular other one that maybe you've heard of is whole life. We're only going to talk about term life because for 99.5% of you out there, that's the only thing you're going to want to consider ever.
And we're not going to spend a whole lot of time on why whole life stinks, but really quickly, we will say term life is so much better than whole life. And it's because term life is really only, in actuality, a life insurance policy. And whole life insurance is a combination life insurance policy and investment. And the problem with that is that separating them is the most efficient way to do them. And buying life insurance and an investment at the same time is just a terrible idea. And the biggest reason is because the commissions are sky high on whole life insurance.
Yeah, man, that's right. So anytime you hear somebody trying to sell you whole life, it's because they make a lot of money, a ton of money on that. And they don't make hardly any money on selling term life policies. And so that's a huge reason that those plans are so aggressively pushed. And yeah, it kind of goes back to knowing where your investments are as well. And when you buy a whole life policy like that and your funds kind of get commingled with your insurance, you can't really wrap your hands around it. What's what? Who knows?
Yeah.
That's not the position that I want to be in when it comes to my investments and looking ahead. And like I did with Kate recently, just budgeting, like you want to be able to look at some solid numbers and know, like, this is what we do. This is what we have coming up. This is what we can count on. And when you're commingling your insurance with investments, I don't like it. Just gets hairy.
Yeah, and you know, we're cheap, but we also kind of want the best thing possible, right? And the great thing is you can be cheap and get the best thing possible. So we talked last week just a little bit about these new Fidelity investment funds that are zero commission, zero fees, which is amazing. And then these term life policies that we're talking about are almost in the same boat. You know, there's very, very few commissions, very few fees charged on these things. They're both really cheap, but they're also actually the best thing for you at the same time. So it's just perfect, blissful marriage where you, if you separate them, you're going to get the best of both worlds. And if you try to combine them, you're going to get screwed.
Yeah, you're going to get in the worst of both worlds.
Exactly. Yeah. So avoid that. Yeah. And part of Josh's question too was, you know, I've got this 15-year policy, whereas a lot of people get a 20-year policy or a 30-year policy. But the reason, and Josh seemed to have a really good reason to get a 15-year policy, was that he would be self-insured 15 years from now. And so that brings us to our next point. The whole point of life insurance is to have that insurance until the point that you can be self-insured and to replace your income in the case of untimely death. So it's not to have an investment vehicle, and it's not to have this thing that lasts for 40 or 50 years. It is this thing to get you from an insurable need right now until the point that you don't have an insurable need. So I love that Josh, he's thinking about it in just the right way.
Yeah, another way to think about being self-insured, because that sounds kind of like, well, how do I self-insure myself? Like, do I have to like write something down on paper? Like, no, it's not like a formal thing or a step that you go through. It's essentially becoming financially independent. And so the amount of money that you have, your assets, if all that combined, you're able to, you know, if you stopped working or if you disappeared off the earth, if you're able to maintain the same amount of cash flow that you were as if you were still working, you're self-insured. You're able to provide that income for your family where you did not be there. And that's what that means. That's all that means.
And yeah, and ultimately that means that you need to have a net worth that surpasses probably the value of the policy that you're in. So in Josh's case, in 15 years, he wants to seek to have a net worth of $2 million or more. Because if he doesn't hit that, if he thinks that's his insurable need right now, and 15 years from now, it will likely still be his insurable need, right? Like that's how much he's going to need for his family if he passes away. He's going to want to have a net worth that's $2 million or more, you know, by the time that policy expires so that he doesn't have to buy another one. So that's how you can know whether you need life insurance or not. Do you have enough sitting there in investments in your bank account, in your overall net worth that would be equal to or more than the value of the policy that you'd be taking out? And if so, man, you're self-insured, you're good to go. You don't need to buy life insurance.
That's right. Otherwise, just view it as sort of like this gap coverage. It covers between now and until you get to that point. It's just this in-between interim thing. Don't think of it as something that you will always have. So think about it almost like car insurance, right? You want to have it around until you know that you could pay out of pocket to replace your vehicle yourself. That's when you would be self-insured when it came to car insurance, because that car value will continue to drop. Maybe initially, you're like right when you first get it, you may not be able to cover replacing that vehicle because, you know, 10, 15 grand maybe, you don't necessarily have that sitting around. So you're going to offer full coverage. As the value of that vehicle continues to drop, you are going to get closer and closer to being able to be self-insured. And that's the point at which you want to consider dropping your collision coverage on your car insurance. What's the point of having that when you've got that amount of money sitting in the bank where you can go out and buy a car the very next day?
Yeah, because if you're paying an extra $600 a year, let's say, for that collision coverage, but your 1997 Daewoo is worth $425, you're throwing away money, right? So there's some good calculations that you can run to kind of figure out if you can be self-insured when it comes to owning your car. We're not going to go through those right now, but that's just kind of a good example, I think. You know, you get to a certain point with your car's value where it makes sense to not have full coverage. And it's the same thing with life insurance, because you are hoping to build your assets over the life of your term policy. And hopefully by the time it expires, you have hit financial independence or the point where your net worth is worth more than the policy that you took out. And then you don't have any need for it anymore.
So Joel, what about you guys personally? You want to share what kind of life insurance you have?
Yes.
That sweet whole life policy that you have?
No way, man. Term life all the way. And so, yeah, we have a 20-year term policy on both my wife and I, and that's for $250,000, which in a perfect world is probably a little bit less than it should be. But the reason that I felt comfortable getting a smaller term policy than most people should probably get is because of the rental income that we make, right? And so that kind of covers a lot of the monthly costs associated with, you know, running our family. And that's why I felt comfortable having just a $250,000 policy on both my wife and I. I think for most people, you know, making a decent salary, they're probably going to want to look at a $500,000 policy minimum. But for us, yeah, we have that slightly smaller policy that I think still works for our family.
Yeah, so I think it's cool that you both have a policy. Is that what you said? You said you and Emily both have 250?
Yep. And so I think that's
pretty huge.
Yeah, and
that's nice is what I'm saying.
Sure.
Because we don't have that.
Oh, really? Well, let's say this. I want to ask you about that too, but really quickly for folks that are married, especially with one of the partners stays at home, yeah. I think it's important to kind of discuss how you divvy up life insurance for that. And so some people think that, you know, a stay-at-home partner shouldn't have as much life insurance or should have no life insurance. And man, I don't know. I just know that if something were to happen to my wife, right? If the worst thing were to happen, right? She's gone and I'm left with the kids and trying to support our family as a single dad.
You want to be able to buy a new wife.
Right. Which is approximately $250,000.
Exactly.
Hopefully I would not be buying a wife, but but I would need to run the house, right? And I would need to get help.
Yes.
And Emily doesn't make an income staying at home, but she certainly provides so much for our family that without her, we would be sunk. And it would cost so much money to run our house without. And, you know, that annual survey comes out about what a stay-at-home mom should actually be paid. And it's, you know, probably accurate in a lot of ways that they do so much.
It continues to grow and grow, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, going back to what we were talking about at the beginning there, I was talking about how little we're able to spend on our grocery budget every month. I feel like that would immediately double.
Sure.
If I was in charge.
Because Kate can give so much time to that.
Yeah, and she's got skills. She just knows how to do it. And again, too, talking about kids, childcare is expensive. And I think for a lot of folks, that's kind of what it comes down to. If you have a spouse, a non-working spouse, you may not need a life insurance policy on them because unfortunately, if that person were to die, it may not change your expenses that much, right? If they're not earning an income. However, kids completely change that. If you have kids at home and essentially they're doing a job for free, they're not getting paid, you know, monetary wage. And at the same time, they're saving your household a ton of money. And so if you have kids, I think that's definitely a time to consider getting a life insurance policy on your spouse for the spouse that might be staying home.
Yeah, the pendulum would shift really quickly, right? Your expenses would go up and you'd have to also spend more for childcare.
And most likely I'd be working a lot less as well. And so I would see my income probably drop as well because of the added responsibilities. Not to say that that's not something that you'd want to do in that situation. Again, these are sad discussions.
Right.
That we're joking about. But at the same time, I think that's the truth of it.
All right. So where does your family line up life insurance policy wise? What do you guys got?
Yeah. So we've got nothing on Kate. Thinking about through this is actually going to probably change that here shortly. Part of me thinks that like, okay, I'm just going to like really buckle down and go crazy if something were to happen to Kate. But I think that's probably like the last thing that my girls would need. I just want to stop talking about this morbid topic. But that being said, so I've got a...
But you also don't know your reaction, right? You don't know your reaction in the case something like that happens. And obviously, you're going to need to take some time. You will probably lose some income.
Sure.
You're going to be, you know, grieving. And so I think, man, yeah, that needs to be something.
It buys you some time at the very least.
Completely. So I think, that's definitely something you need to look into. So what do you have?
So what we do have is that... So I got a 25-year policy several years ago. And it was a 25-year term policy for $500,000, and we pay right at $400 annually. And so I got that when I was pretty young. It was after we had purchased a home. We knew we were going to start a family soon. It's something I kind of wanted to get taken care of before you're in the haze, you're in the fog for a year with a new baby. And so I'm pretty sure I've got around 17 years left on that policy, which honestly, I think is like the perfect amount of time for me to be able to self-insure. In that period of time, I should be able to be self-insured. I should be able to be financially independent, or at the very least, if something were to happen to me, Kate would be pretty set. You know, again, like you said, with the income generating assets that we have with real estate, that in conjunction with the sort of lump sum that gets paid out there in an untimely death, I think she'd be fine. You know, we can get to this a little bit later on, but I can get another policy if I wanted to. But I think more of a priority might be to go ahead and get Kate on a policy because...
Yeah.
Pretty sure I'm going to need that help.
And Josh didn't ask this question, but hopefully he learns from this conversation between you and I that he probably needs to consider, you know, if he's married, that he and he would be, right? If he has a life insurance policy and he's not married, we'll get to this in a second. As a single person, you don't need to have life insurance. Like, you're not insuring for anybody else in all likelihood. But so, Josh, you're likely married. If you have kids, you also need to consider getting a policy on your wife. Because if, you know, you were to lose your wife, you run into all these issues that Matt and I are discussing. So it's really important to, maybe you need a lesser policy. Maybe you need a $500,000 or $1 million policy on your wife. But maybe instead of getting another policy for yourself, because it sounds like you're in a pretty good position, consider shopping for a policy for her. That'd be the thing I would recommend to you right now.
Yeah, I like it.
And real quick, back to, you know, the single people. If you are single, living alone, nobody depends on you for income. The income is ultimately used by you, for you. There's no one else that's relying on you in any way, form, or fashion. You don't need life insurance. And so, you know, I know a lot of single people think that, you know, oh, do I need to get life insurance to cover for my funeral or something like that? I mean, in all likelihood, hopefully, you know, a small amount of savings will cover that. So I wouldn't recommend getting, you know, all out term life insurance policy where you're paying, you know, $20, $30, $40 a month for, you know, a policy that's way bigger just for that.
Yeah, man, don't worry about it. You know, a lot of times people worry too specifically about their debts. No one's going to get that debt unless someone else's name is on that debt, right? So if you have a mortgage and a partner, you know, specifically, again, going back to like a spouse or a partner, but if their name is on that mortgage, then yes, they're going to be responsible for that. But if your name is the only name on that mortgage, if your name is the only name on those credit cards or your student loan, if you pass, so do those debts and they just get written off, essentially, is how it works. So don't worry about that. Don't think that you're parents or, you know, your siblings or somebody else is going to get stuck with that debt. That isn't something that actually happens. They'll be fine. They'll be sad you're gone. But.
Yeah, they will. They will. We all will be. And so, so no policy needed unless you have people that depend on you for that income. Okay.
So we're going to get to part two of Josh's question here in a second. But first, Joel, let's take a break. And now we're moving on to part two of the question, which was also, what age should I make sure I get a policy before? Is there a certain age where if I apply for a policy, it will be significantly more expensive, or is it all health-based? And to that, Josh, don't worry about it. It's not like car insurance where once you hit 25, you know, like the price is going to drop off all of a sudden. It's not the opposite of that when it comes to life insurance.
Because it's like eminently provable that you're a knucklehead before 25 and you're going to like start wrecking into cars. I mean, I got into like three wrecks before the age of 25 and I haven't gotten into one since. So
yeah. Yeah. Same here, man. College. I think I was brain damaged. I mean, they say it because yeah. like especially
your frontal cortex like isn't fully developed.
Is it male specifically that the like the brains don't fully developed?
I wouldn't put it past us.
Yeah. I don't know if my brain's fully developed even now, but I look back now and there's things I ask myself. I'm like, what was I thinking / doing?
Completely. So yeah, there really isn't a magic age like there is with car insurance to get a term life insurance policy. But typically the longer you wait to get a policy, the more it's going to cost you. Likely an average of 8-10% bump every year that you wait. You might also have to go through a more thorough health exam the older you get. So if you are purchasing a term life insurance policy in your 20s or early 30s, it's going to be cheaper and a little bit easier when it comes to the health exam. And if you wait longer, you know, it's probably going to be a little more intrusive and the rates are going to go up.
What do you mean by intrusive health exam, Joel?
You know, they put the glove on and you know how it goes from there.
Yeah, I will say, so the health factors, you know, fitness and dangerous hobbies, those are things that weigh into the underwriter's algorithm, I guess, pretty heavily.
So disc golf, I'm fine, but skydiving, not so good, right?
Exactly. But luckily, those are things that we have control over, you know, like your general state of health. Awesome. You can do something about that. Same thing with dangerous hobbies. There are things that you can't control quite as much, like your health, family health history, or even like pre-existing conditions. Certainly, you don't have control over those things. But it's worth mentioning, worth knowing as you're sort of deciding whether to kind of hold off and put off getting a life insurance plan or if you're going to go ahead and get one now.
Yeah. And the cool thing when it comes to, you know, health insurance exams, Matt, you and I, when we both got our policies, it's changed a lot. And so, you know, when Emily and I got our policies, a nurse came to our actual house.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, because a nurse came to my house. It's like, kind of weird because I'm hanging out in my living room and she's got all of her nurse gear.
Yeah, they like draw your blood. They're like staring you down, you know, like poking you in the face, stuff like that. Just making sure you're healthy. And
didn't get poked in my face. Sorry.
Oh, that was just me? Okay. The cool thing is that a couple of companies have developed something called Instant Term. Now they're able to finalize coverage without the need for a medical exam. The cool thing is, you know, they're asking you a bunch of questions to find out your health history, and then they're looking at a combination of that and your medical records, and they're able to determine, you know, kind of what rate you should be insured at based on those things. That's kind of cool. And two of the best companies to get quotes at in general, but that actually do this kind of instant term process where you don't actually have to have a nurse come to your home, are companies like Haven Life and Policy Genius. And so we'll have links to those two companies in the show notes on our website. But if you kind of want the easy ticket to getting term life insurance, man, those are two companies I would recommend shopping with.
Okay, then so our advice to you would be to get some level term life insurance as soon as you have an insurable need. Once you are financially obligated and then you have family members who are counting on you to pay that financial obligation, you want to take care of them if you aren't there to work and earn money to pay that financial obligation. So say you have a partner and you have a mortgage. That is a time when you're going to want to consider getting life insurance. Say you have kids. They're all dependent on you, whether they're solely dependent on you if your spouse is not employed, or even still, if you're both employed, you're going to need some extra coverage there when it comes time to kind of sort out your finances after you've passed.
And so say you're a co-host of a Craft Beer and Money podcast and your wife doesn't have life insurance. You should really consider getting some life insurance for her, right?
Because we are bringing in bank, and I know that if I were not able to podcast anymore, that Kate would be really hurting when it came to her grocery budget.
It's true, man. It's true. Another thing I wanted to address really quick, Matt, is life insurance through work. A lot of people are offered life insurance through their employer, and they think that's the best place to get it, right? It's the easiest place, right? You just kind of click something every year during open enrollment, and you get more life insurance. Well, the thing is, life insurance through work is actually much more costly when you factor it out than getting a term life insurance through, say, a site like policygenius.com. So we would say shop the open market. Don't get the life insurance provided to you through work. And most people, you know, your employer is going to offer you a small amount for free. So take that, right? Take the free life insurance. But anything on top of that, you're going to want to shop on the market. And the one caveat to that is if you have real health problems that would prevent you from getting a decent rate on the open market, then it might actually make sense for you to get insurance through your employer if you can't shop the open market and get the good rates.
That's right. You might just have a dangerous hobby that you just can't kick. In that case, keep that 9 to 5.
It's like, sorry, Joel, you're playing too much Settlers of Catan and we're worried about wrist injuries. So,
yeah, man, that's right. And that also makes me think of getting an additional plan, sort of like you said. Sometimes that's referred to as layering. And that's definitely something that you can do. So say, like in our case, I got a policy several years ago. And if Kate and I sat down and decided that the coverage that we have isn't quite enough and that we don't really feel comfortable with what we have anymore, well, I can get another policy and sort of, you know, layer that on top to kind of sort of fill that gap, sort of fill that need and get us to where we are comfortable. It doesn't mean you need to totally trash the existing policy that you've been paying into. And chances are you're going to want to keep that around because you've locked in a nice low premium for however many years. And so layering is definitely something you want to consider. And
yeah. So getting back to Josh's specific question, right? Like that actually might be the perfect solution for him, is to do the layering and get a small policy that extends for longer than his current policy. So let's say he's not fully self-insured in 15 years, right? He doesn't have that $2 million net worth like we talked about earlier, but he's most of the way there. He still feels like he has an insurable need. Well, if at the age of 35, which is how old he is right now, he decides to take out a 25-year, $500,000 policy. Well, that might kind of be that perfect layering that he needs. It doesn't add much monthly expense to pay those premiums, but it gives him kind of that ability to not rush quite as hard to make sure that he's financially independent in 15 years. It gives him like a little more leeway. So, you know, that's a good way to do it, is to do kind of some layering like you talked about. I think it's a great solution in the case that you feel like you need more after you've taken out kind of an initial policy and you feel like it's not enough.
Yeah, man, I like that. All right, man, let's get back to this beer. Odd 13 Brewing. Intergalactic Juice Hunter, and it's called Juice Hunter because it is a juicy double IPA. It's so good, man.
Yeah, man. I don't know what to say except for, you know, when I had this beer with Carl at the podcast conference that I went to, we had it actually right after we had a beer called Heady Topper, which, if people don't know about that, it's one of the best beers in the country.
It's like one of the original New England style IPAs, right?
Yep. And I like this one more. Yeah. And I still do. This is the freaking delicious.
So having not ever had a Heady Topper, I'll just go ahead and agree with you because I really like this as well. I'm still not sure about the kind of the graphic novel, the comic book artwork, Did you ever get into like Marvel and DC?
No, not really.
Like the comics? Do you even see like the comic book movies?
No, I hate them.
Dude, do you really?
Yeah.
You gotta watch a couple of them.
No, I hate superhero movies.
Dude.
And plus, like, how many Spider-Mans can you make? Really?
Well,
really?
I'm not saying I want to watch another Spider-Man, but evidently Infinity War, which sounds kind of ridiculous. That's like they all come together, all the superheroes.
Dude, I don't even know what movies are out anymore. Like, seriously, I couldn't tell you one movie in the theaters. It's ridiculous.
Well, if you want to see a superhero movie while you're drinking Intergalactic Juice Hunter, watch Infinity War, because evidently it was awesome. Okay.
All right, I'm assuming there's a Star Wars and the Harry Potter's done, so that's all I know.
Oh, dude,
movies.
Shut up. Yeah. Don't you talk bad about Harry Potter.
No, I love Harry Potter, but it's okay. Just done. It's not in theaters anymore, right? Yeah. No, I love Harry Potter's good. I can get on board with that.
Oh, dude.
In any depressing indie movie that's up for Best Picture. I'm up for that, but nah, man, I don't do superhero movies.
Yeah, that being said, I'm totally cool with them putting that on the can because...
Dude, you can put anything on the can if
it can just be a blank can or just like a stick figure drawing of like a guy pouring hops into a giant brewing vat.
Yep.
I'd be fine with that.
Literally, anything on the can, if the beer tastes as good, it doesn't matter. I will drink it.
Yeah, one of the best IPAs I think I've had, gosh, man, like to date, you know? Like the juice, the hops, the kick, like that hoppy kick. It's all there. I miss IPAs. It's been so long since I've had some good IPAs. Thank you for bringing this down, man.
No problem, buddy. All right, so real quick, let's go over just a couple points of the need to knows about term life insurance based on Josh's question.
The first thing is only consider a level term life insurance policy. Josh, you're already on the right track. You mentioned how you've got a 15-year policy, term life. That's what you want. Only consider that. Keep in mind that the point of life insurance is to have insurance until the point that you can be self-insured. Once you're financially independent and you don't need that insurance to be able to pay off your debts and to support your family, then you don't need to have that insurance policy anymore. So the fact that you've got a 15-year policy because you're planning to be self-insured within that period of time, I love it, man. That's great.
Yeah, and people try to pitch you on a lot of different names of life insurance, but really the best, the cheapest, the one that you want to look at is term life insurance. It's got the least amount of commission, the best bang for your buck. Yeah, and you want to make sure that it's going to cover any insurable need that you have. So if a $2 million policy is going to cover your family in the event of your untimely death, then that's great. And for me and Matt, you know, we have lower amounts because of how our investments are structured. We don't feel the need to insure for quite as much. So it really depends on your individual situation, what your insurable need is. And once you assess that, you can decide the term length and the amount that you need to be insured for.
And as far as the when, so when should you buy level term life insurance? Well, as soon as you have an insurable need, meaning if you have family or anyone that is dependent on you and your income that you bring to the table, you want to have some life insurance.
Yeah, and you want to make sure you shop, just like you shop for anything else, right, to get the best price. Well, term life insurance, you want to shop with reputable companies, but you want to get the best price, right? And so we would recommend shopping at websites like havenlife.com. and policygenius.com. We'll have those linked for you in the show notes. And Policy Genius in particular, you know, pits some of the major companies against each other, bidding to offer you the lowest cost term life policy possible. And lastly, Josh, in your situation, man, it sounds like you're covered really well. But the one thing you might want to consider is what Matt kind of talked about at the end is layering, right? And so maybe adding a smaller policy that covers you for a little bit longer term, just in case you feel you're feeling a little bit uncomfortable about meeting that 15-year window to be financially independent, where your net worth is actually going to be more than the term policy amount.
Yeah, and honestly, I think any listener can kind of take comfort from that, right? Being able to have the option to layer, it means that you don't have to get it exactly right the very first time. You can sort of switch it up, you can change things. So all that being said, if you have an insurable need, go ahead and get life insurance. It doesn't have to be perfect. Having something is better than nothing because you want to have that in place.
No doubt. Thanks everyone for listening. Our home on the web is howtomoney.com. Check it out and we'll have our show notes up for this episode.
Yeah, and hopefully you found this episode helpful. If you found it randomly, be sure to check us out on Apple Podcasts where you can subscribe and you can get all the new episodes as they are released.
Until next time, buddy. Best friends
Best
out.
Best friends out. Whoa, I shot that one across the table there.